This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, where the Brewers take on the Braves for game three of their series in Atlanta. The Brewers with a 7-2 victory last night, their fifth win in a row. Pat Murphy.
You really have to be disciplined right now. More than ever before, we got to be disciplined. It's how we play and the mindset we're in when we play, because circumstances say ball could have bounced the other way and we're not, those numbers aren't there. You know, you have to just be consistent in how you prepare and be attached to your process, not your results.
NFL, he's slated to be their starting defensive back to replace Jair Alexander, but Nate Hobbs will miss all of the preseason games after having knee surgery over the weekend. It happened last Thursday in practice.
I'm just happy that it wasn't nothing more serious.
Was it meniscus?
It was a meniscus.
Okay, and right knee, I assume.
Right knee, yes, sir. I'm committed, as I say I am.
That's Packers defensive back Nate Hobbs with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
I used to smoke. I thought a cigarette is my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Covering the games and biggest sports news, listen daily to Mike Clemens on Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hey, American worker, the GOP cares. Yeah, big round of applause for the GOP and their deep concern for you and your working family. Hey, you know, they care. They said it. They wrote it somewhere once, right? And look, the sad reality is a lot of working families are realizing the dinner table just got a little bit lighter. Groceries are still up. Healthcare is gone. Jobs, well, you can be your own boss. Hashtag be your own boss. With no safety net, no unemployment, no safe working conditions, no Social Security, nothing. And, you know, nothing says 2025 like desperation. And I guess nothing really says 2025 like, hey, we love screwing the working class. You know, gutting Medicaid, slashing food assistance, high-fiving the Chamber of Commerce while they line their pockets with another tax cut. Yeah, it's great. And the reality is, you know, Trump's big nightmare bill sailed through Congress, and, well, food stamps, yeah, not so much. Unemployment, seeing a haircut, and Medicaid got whacked. They're saying, what, some 17 million Americans now are going to face losing health coverage, which means for everybody who's still fortunate enough to have crummy health insurance, it's going to go up because of uncompensated care. But don't understand that the emperor has no clothes. Not to mention, there are going to be a couple million children who are going to know the pleasures of going to bed hungry so they can wake up in ready and, you know, bootstraps and you know, gumption and, you know, all that. You know, the hunger pangs are going to make them work harder. And I know Republicans claim, you know, all that's about fiscal responsibility. Yeah. It used to be mama needs a new pair of shoes. It appears Jeff Bezos needs a new yacht. But don't worry, folks. Don't worry about AI. Don't worry about robotics. Don't worry about you losing your job, because there will always be gig work as long as, you know, Musk or Bezos or any of them take a dump in a hotel. Someone needs to clean it, and maybe the robot will break and you can go right in there. But now Republicans are moving forward with the Modern Worker Empowerment Act. I got to tell you, Orwellian on steroids. This piece of legislation backed by Republican Representative Kevin Kiley and the rest of the GOP corporate wrecking crew clarifies what it means to be an independent contractor. That's H.R. 1319. What you need to know is it's going to be easier for Amazon, Uber, and every other mega corporation to say, hey, you're not an employee. You're your own boss. You're like us. You're a corporation, because corporations are people. Remember that. All the while, actual employees are going to risk losing overtime, health and safety protections, the right to organize. You know, they can negotiate with their own boss. They can be their own boss and negotiate, you, with all that leverage that one person has. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a sternly worded Yelp review would help. But, you know, the reality is it's not just in the House that's going after workers. You know, with a straight face, I don't know how Senator Tim Scott, Cassidy, or Rand Paul, for that matter, how they can stand behind what I guess they're calling innovative legislation, promising flexibility, you know, while quietly ensuring that corporate America can just gut your benefits and you can have portable ones, portable non-existent ones. And again, shifting responsibility onto the backs of those least able to shoulder them. Because understand, what they want to do is they want portable benefits for independent workers. You know, your own boss. And it sounds good, I guess. Sounds modern. Sounds like something we might actually do something with. But what they won't say is the Association Health Plan Act would herd gig workers into a bunch of junk insurance. You know, they give you a nice card, doesn't cover much. They would unlock retirement fairness, evidently, by basically promising savings accounts, which most workers can't even afford now because guess what? Wages haven't kept up since the Reagan era. And while the GOP and their messaging machine is poor performance art, you know, the idea that they care about families, what does it mean for the rest of us workers when the bad policies, again, the terrible policies, come back to bite us? The reality is that if Trump and company at all actually cared about working people, they wouldn't be dreaming up these schemes to, you know, kick poor kids out of doctor's offices or steal what little is left in the pantry so billionaires can have more tax cuts. And the sad reality is we've been moving in this direction for years. We've been going down this road for years. The training has been there. You can be your own boss. And I watched it happen, you know, in my years in the trucking industry. An industry that was once solidly blue-collar, middle-class, family-sustaining jobs. They turned that industry and this is bipartisanship. Let's not fool ourselves. They turned that industry into sweatshops on wheels. What used to have strong union protections? Well, when I started, the LTL industry was 85% unionized, down to about 10% now. Those superior wages and benefits and health insurance and pensions and all of that that I've been able to enjoy, they aren't going to be there for the next generation. Because you know what is there? Gig work. You're your own boss. Buy your own truck. Put your own tires on. Pay your own fuel. Pay your own tolls. Pay your own insurance. And when something breaks, yeah, you know, pay your own way. And they've sold it to us as like, this is what Americans do. Pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. That's not what built this country into the prosperous powerhouse it once was. What we've witnessed in my lifetime, massive redistribution of wealth from the people who actually show up every day, punch a clock and do the work, well, to the people who are sitting on their yachts, now collecting another tax break. So your kid doesn't have lunch money. At least the caviar will be, is it chilled or warmed? On yachts. I don't even know. But they'll have both. Because, well, your kid's not going to have lunch money. Something wrong, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, David Bohrer is going to be here. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked about the Ninth Circuit, their decision that basically gives Trump the ability to fire about two-thirds of the federal workforce under the cover of national security. And the interesting thing is the court even recognized that there was retaliation and selective enforcement against the unions. There was all of this stuff, but they ruled that, well, the president should have deference on national security issues. And my question is how many of our federal employees, especially the nearly 1 million affected by this, how many of them are in national security? And here to share some thoughts on, well, how this is going to play out, maybe. I've asked our good friend David Bohrer to come share some thoughts. He's a labor attorney, a longtime union labor attorney and friend of the show, currently with the firm Gilbert Employment Law there in Washington, D.C. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Glad to be here.
So walk me through this decision. The Ninth Circuit, which you know, had two Trump appointees and I think an Obama appointee on it, they voted 3-0. As I understand, to say, yep, the president has the right to, under national security, to can anybody he wants. Walk me through this.
Yeah, let's back up at the beginning. The executive order that was issued that's the basis for the lawsuit basically said that the government was going to withdraw collective bargaining rights from 950,000 federal workers in a range of different agencies. And AFGE went to court in I believe Oakland and got the district court there to issue an injunction that said, no, you can't do that. The government appealed to the Ninth Circuit and asked, while it's on appeal, for what's called a stay to stop the effect of the injunction. And so the Ninth Circuit, as you just described, ruled in the government's favor and stayed the injunction that was in place by the district court. So where that leads us is, you know, the Court of Appeals is basically signaling that they're okay with this construct that the White House came in with. It says, well, all these agencies are part of the national security apparatus, and therefore, you know, we have to have the right to just wipe out collective bargaining, wipe out their contracts, and so forth. What gives the lie to that is, you know, some of these agencies, the AFGE and other unions have been negotiating for decades, and it's never had an impact on national security that anybody's demonstrated. So some of that hopefully will come out in the, you know, as the litigation continues now, the union will have a chance to prove its case that this isn't about national security at all.
Does this go to the Supreme Court next? Where does this go next?
Well, the Ninth Circuit has stayed the injunction, and I'm not sure. I think it'll return now to the district court, I believe, for further proceedings. Because it was decided, the injunction was decided at the very beginning of litigation, so there's no factual record for the Court of Appeals of the Supreme Court to deal with. Whether AFGE and the other unions decide to go to the Supreme Court on the question of the stay that was issued, I don't really know if they'll try that. Obviously, the Supreme Court has signaled in other recent cases that they're just fine with all this crazy stuff the White House wants
to
do.
No, that was going to be my point. Is, you know, it almost seems fruitless. It seems like, you know, Trump is going to be able to wield power that no president at least in my lifetime, has ever been able to have, especially with the federal workforce. So this is kind of, you know, to steal a Bidenism, kind of a big freaking deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And you know, I said to somebody the other day, you know, an injury to 1 million people is an injury to all, right? We've never seen union busting on this scale before. And it's really concerning to those of us who do this work that, you know, they're coming after all of us, right? You know, let's face it. This is the public sector. This is the federal sector. But they're coming after all of us. And they just as soon see the end of the labor movement,
sure,
in the United
States. But where you're at is where the union density in this country is. Without the public sector being, last I checked, you know, like 30% unionized, we're in the well into the single digits if they're able to do in the public sector what they've been able to do in the private sector. And look, I talked about during the campaign, there are people going, we just need government to run like a business. This is what government running like a business looks like.
Yeah, and that's nonsense. The government isn't a business. It's a government, and it's meant to look out for the welfare of all the people. And one way they do that, when Congress adopted the collective bargaining law, was to say, yeah, this is in the public interest to have the workers have a voice in their workplace and collective bargaining and an enforceable contract. Congress has said that's in the public interest. What the White House is doing is saying, you know, there's an exception in the law that says the president can, you know, do away with collective bargaining if the provisions of the law cannot be applied to the agency in a manner consistent with national security requirements. Well, what they're trying to do is say that virtually the entire government has some role in national security. In the past, that exclusion has covered things like the FBI or the NSA or things like that. And they're trying to say, if you work at a concession stand at a VA hospital, you've got a national security component to your job. It's just crazy.
Oh, it's ludicrous, but it's what private sector employers have been able to get away with for years and skirting our labor laws. So I'm not shocked. In fact, you know, during the campaign was saying bad things are going to happen. This is right in that wheelhouse of bad things.
Right. And you know, it's especially sort of pernicious because the White House knows that the courts are reluctant to second guess the national security determinations, right? So, and you can see it in the decision from the Ninth Circuit. They're just really reluctant to, you know, get behind what went into the president's decision about national security, because that's an area that's really reserved for the president. And I understand that, but when it's not based in fact, you have to really question whether it's legitimate or not. And like I said, for decades, yeah, we've had collective bargaining in all of those agencies, and it's never had an impact on national security.
So let me ask you the bigger question, because, you know, Trump is, you know, has said, you know, you get in my way, basically, we're going to get rid of you. I look at what happened with the BLS commissioner. Dear Leader didn't like what was reported, even though Dear Leader's part of the reason why those numbers are so bad. You don't get to fire a bunch of federal government workers and not be counted. But, you know, how much of this do you think is pushing us towards the world of making patronage great again, making sure that every federal government worker knows their favorite Trump executive order and can write that essay on command?
Yeah, there are other executive orders to that end as well. He has an executive order creating what they call Schedule F among federal employees that are all essentially patronage jobs. It's a throwback to before the progressive era in the 1800s, when, you know, Boss Tweed and people like that hired all their friends to run the local government. He wants to be, you know, Boss Trump, and we've already seen it at the sort of the cabinet level, but that's not enough for him. He wants to put his people at every level of government.
But wasn't that what Project 2025 was? I mean, what caught my attention with Project 2025, and we were one of the first programs in the country to pick up on it, was they were already beginning to vet people to work at all levels of government, but you had to give them your social media. You had to write an essay of why you thought Trump was a good guy. You had to be pure and loyal enough to be considered for those jobs, because they were talking about Schedule F, firing all those bureaucrats and putting in good sycophants and loyalists. That's not new. They're just doing what we knew they were going to do.
Exactly. And, you know, there's no end in sight at this point. Now, the good news here is that this litigation and a lot of the other court cases, it's the same. The litigation is not over. This is at a very preliminary stage. And the court hasn't decided that what he's doing here is legal or constitutional yet. All they've decided is, well, we're not going to issue an injunction. We're going to stay the injunction because of the broad national security interests of, okay, of the president. But, you know, as the litigation goes forward, there's still an opportunity to argue about all this stuff.
No, and that good. I mean, at least there's some fight still, because yeah, ultimately, like I've been saying, in the public sector, where the union density is, once that happens, once that goes away, we're right back where we started from, when being in a union was almost illegal and you had to sign yellow dog contracts and be threatened to be blacklisted and excommunicated from company towns. I mean, it seems like we're going back to the future.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, that's what they want. They want the unions out and they want all that patronage. And something we haven't talked about, which is also a key part of this, is they want to make the government not work so that they can justify privatizing the whole thing. You know, they had, at one point a few months ago, they proposed to lay off 80,000 workers at the VA, for example. Well, the VA was already 50,000 people short of full staffing levels, and they want to lay off another 80,000 people. That's nothing but trying to destroy the VA. And that's one that they've been working on for a long time, because that's, you know, billions upon billions of dollars that they could funnel into all their crooked,
to their criminal friends on Wall Street. Absolutely. No, yep. I completely agree. And all the vulture capitalists who are just willing and ready and able to take our VA benefits away. But, you know, here's the thing. I know people out there go, well, that's just those government workers. Don't care about them. It's not going to touch me. My union's okay. I'm now looking at a lot of changes at the NLRB. And this most recent case that's popped up with this Wayne Sanderson Farms, I think in Louisiana, where they're trying to do away with the contract bar, which basically, as I understand it, and you can help me with this, is, you know, you go in, you try and negotiate your first contract. You can't decertify or any of that during that first 3 years, that first contract, because they want to let it breathe, let it grow a little bit. If they do away with this, how much of a blow is this for the private sector workforce?
It's huge. You know, we're at a point where we're seeing a lot of organizing activity. And like you said, it takes a while for this to all play out. You know, the look at the Starbucks folks. They've organized over the past few years. They don't have their first contract yet. And when you get your first contract, then there's still a lengthy sort of implementation period until everything, you know, starts to come together. But if there's no contract bar, the same people that just voted in the union can, you know, turn around and vote them out, or maybe not the same people. Maybe people have left. In the meantime, the company's hired a bunch of people that are anti-union and quickly vote them out. So the idea is to prevent that kind of shenanigans on right. The company side and bar them from for a period of years once the union wins.
Or employers go in and make all kinds of offers. Okay, we heard you, and give a big bonus and all this stuff. You vote the union out, you'll get this. And doing a lot of those kind of things that are kind of illegal, but, you know, we don't really have the enforcement mechanism to hold them accountable.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's an unfair labor practice, or at least it has been, you know, in over the course of my career, the last 40 years. But, you know, they put people in charge of the NLRB, and, you know, maybe things that for 50 years were an unfair labor practice, they decide, well, no, it's not an unfair labor practice anymore. Or something like the contract bar rule or the election bar rule that says, you know, there's a period of what they call in the law repose, where, you know, you have to let things settle for a while before you can come back and undo the whole thing. All that's, you know, in the hands of people who have an axe to grind, like we know these folks do, all that's, you know, vulnerable.
You said you've been doing this 40 years. Can you imagine it? Did you ever imagine this bad?
No. You know, I started in 81, so it's 44 years. And it was just about the same time that Reagan, you know, pulled the trigger and fired the air traffic controllers. And it was downhill, you know, for the preceding 30, 40 years after that, because just like now, the government sent the signal with Reagan firing the air traffic controllers. He signaled private industry that open warfare against the unions is
shot heard across
appropriate,
the boardroom.
Okay, you know, whatever. And frankly, you know, the labor movement negotiated with its head down for the succeeding 30 years for fear of having what happened to PATCO or what happened at TWA or some of the other places happen to them. And it's only been in the last 5 or 10 years that we've started to pick our head up again and say, hey, you know, we're here to fight because, you know, workers need to fight back and regain some of the ground we've lost over the decades since PATCO.
So last question I've got for you. What's the answer to this? I mean, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of union members out there going, hey, it could be me next. What should the movement be doing? And it seems like the movement's in a weird spot. Because you've got, you know, folks like the Teamsters who are, you know, clearly on Trump's side. You've got other unions who are, you know, just appeasing the administration. So, hey, they're not coming after us right now. What should the movement be doing?
Well, look at history. Appeasement never works, you know, you know, trying to, you know, just keep our heads down and hope they don't notice is that's not going to work. in my view, and this is just me talking, the labor movement needs to stand up and meet this moment. The only reason some people in the working class are supporting the current administration is because they were sold a bill of goods about how he was going to help them. Well, he's not going to help them. The labor movement could help them, and we need to get about that business. Yeah. We need to stand up and show people that we're willing to fight on their behalf, and what better cause is there than to come and stand up for a million federal workers?
No, like you said, an injury to a million is an injury to basically to all.
Yeah.
David, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again really soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Rick. Appreciate the work you're doing.
Thanks so much. David Borer, good friend of the show, longtime labor attorney. Want to hear your thoughts. Concerned? Worried? Do you think this trickles down to the rest of us? Or is this just those government workers? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball on WRCE is brought to you by Walsh's Ace Hardware, Richland Electric, Meister Log and Lumber Company, The Shoebox, Napa Auto and Truck Parts.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight, maybe a storm late, and lows in the mid-60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, few showers and storms, heating up, highs up into the mid-80s. Hot and humid Friday, mostly sunny, highs within a few degrees of 90. Right now it's 76.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Laura McCoy, she is a member of the Green Bay School Board.
In the 1990s, revenue caps were put into place, and Green Bay was a conservative, low-spending district. Mm-hmm. We've been struggling with that basically ever since. The people in our community have stepped up again and again to pass referendums. That's wonderful, but we need that per-pupil increase. We need the cash to keep the lights on, basically, and to pay our staff what they deserve.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, this week we've been talking about Trump firing the BLS commissioner and the chilling effect that that's had throughout the workforce. We're seeing stories all over the place about cuts to SNAP programs affecting low-wage workers, and just this all-out assault on working people, you know, the changes that they're going to be making at the NLRB. Across the labor board, there are massive changes, and not good. Not good for working people, not good for employees. Great for the bosses, great for the privateers and the profiteers, not so good for the people who work for a living. And the stories that I'm hearing at our veterans, at our VA, at our Veterans Administration hospitals, and that, I'm not hearing great things there either. And again, Trump and the Republicans ran on, they were going to be the military administration. They were going to take care of our veterans. They were going to do all kinds of stuff. Question is are they? And that's why I've asked Jennifer Soltz to come share some thoughts with me. She's the president of AFGE Local 1862. You can check out their website at afge.org. Jennifer, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi. Thank you for bringing me on.
So, look, we're seeing a lot of this chaos. We're seeing a lot of these stories of, you know, just assaults on labor across the board, especially your union at AFGE. What's the sense that you're getting from your members, your coworkers? What are you feeling?
I mean, the assaults that have happened since January 20th has just been, I mean, it's insane. Unprecedented times that we are in right here. Trying to destroy and take away our rights to organizing and having, you know, a labor management relationship has been detrimental, especially within the walls of the VA. And a lot of the employees are not really seeing it because they're coming to work, they're doing their job, and they're going home. They don't really pay attention to most of the stuff that the politics are that's happening right now coming out of DC. And, you know, we share emails, we share things on our Facebook group page. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of flack back from some employees, and we've lost a few members. But most of these people are coming around now and thinking, you know, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I cast my vote for. Why are they doing this? And my response is, I've been talking about this for over a year. You know, we tried. Yeah. We tried to warn you.
No. Like I said, the same thing here. When they go, can you believe he did this? You go, yeah, I told you he was going to do it. We talked about this for quite some time. So, you know, when we hear these stories that, you know, because Trump now with the Ninth Circuit decision can basically hire, fire anybody he wants. Because, well, we're giving deference to him on national security grounds, although I'm not quite sure how a VA hospital, you know, in Pennsylvania or in Virginia or anywhere falls under our national security, you know, platform. He's going to be able to do this. So the stories of cutting between 30 and 83,000 VA jobs, that's got to be something that your members are affected by, considering from the people that I talk to, you're already overworked and underpaid.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So I became the president of this local in February of 2024. We had fantastic, you know, employees. We were a very efficient local facility. And in shortly after February of 2024, the federal government announced that there were federal budget issues and they had to cut back on employees because of these budget issues. Like, we were millions of dollars over the budget because we had too many staff. So I can tell you specific numbers at the Altoona VA from February of 2024 to December of 2024. They cut 170 positions throughout the facility by using attrition. So people left, you know, or they retired. They used that and then they just didn't backfill those positions. So going into the Trump administration, we were already seeing the effects of losing staff. So they piggyback all this workload and they say, okay, well, now Susie, you're going to go and do Jane's job because Jane left. So, okay, there's one, but now you have the Trump administration who comes in and they offer the DRP program, the designated resignation program. They offered out early retirements. And I mean, we lost, I think in Altoona, I'm pretty sure the number, and I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but 50 plus, I'm going to say 50 plus more employees. So we're up over 200 and now they're talking about, well, they're going to reorganize. How many more people are you going to cut? Like, we have specifically, we're down 8 providers.
Wow.
These providers are direct patient care. How do you expect, being short that many providers, to handle a panel of patients that is anywhere from 750 to 1300 veterans on a panel? And, you know, I keep saying our veterans need to be more involved, but the staff that do work in our facility are genuinely there to serve the veterans. And that's all we hear. I'm here because I love to help my veterans and I want to be able to support my veterans. But at what point do you throw the flag in the air and say that the agency, federal government, is taking advantage of your moral compass? Because they will not offer overtime. They will not offer comp time unless you physically are sitting with a patient. So that could be, but however, patients are scheduled through the main operational hours, 8 to 4:30. But there's all kinds of things that's done in the health field behind the scenes. Like, you're not sitting in your doctor's chair. So take, for instance, you go to a doctor's appointment. You have your 15, 20-minute appointment with your provider. Then you leave. They order tests. They send out, you know, records, or they order your care. They review things. Order prescriptions, that's not being classified as direct patient care. So you can't get overtime. You can't get comp time to stay late and make sure that all those T's have been crossed for that direct patient care that is needed. And it's frustrating to these providers. We're going to lose more. And matter of fact, a week ago today, we were in an open forum meeting with our medical center director. And I did type in the chat, at what point is leadership concerned with losing good employees?
It's an honest question.
Who are here for the greater of the good? His response was, work in itself is an inconvenience. Like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you have people that are leaving.
What does that mean? Work in itself, what does that mean?
I mean, here's the thing. The question that I posed was, if you have people doing one, two, and three people's jobs, at what point does leadership get concerned that you're going to lose good staff? And he said, work in itself is an inconvenience. If people aren't happy here, you know, they can go and seek happiness wherever they deem to feel fit. But we have to run by the agency mission, which we're doing it. He's getting praise because Altoona has great staff, great employees, but at what cost?
Right.
I mean, burnout is a thing.
Because you said a moment ago that, you know, you think they're taking advantage of the goodwill and the, you know, the commitment to our veterans, which I don't doubt. But I also have to wonder if this is just all part of the grand scheme in making the place so intolerable that good people do leave. And it does fold so that they can privatize and profitize it and ultimately go to what their bottom line is government can't or shouldn't do anything. So I'm curious, how much do you see of that?
I mean, a lot. I do think that's what they're doing. I do believe that they're making it such a miserable place to be that they want to snuff out a lot of people so that they can privatize and do away with the personalization of the care that the veterans give. And listen, I'm an employee there too. I have a job other than being the local president, and I am the same type of employee. I stay, I make sure I do right by my veterans because I value the services that I provide to veterans. And that's all the staff that are at the Altoona VA. They all value what they're doing.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I may sit there and stay 20 minutes late because I want to make sure that I have finished that out because I have, you know, OCD that I don't want to let it go to the next day. There's a lot of people that are like that, but they have mechanisms in place that they can track all of this. And, you know, you said about the privatization, like people don't think that can happen, but it absolutely can. Like, we are a small community. They could funnel all of the veterans that are served here in Blair County to a bigger, larger VA and do away with it. And I've been talking about this. We talk about it every month in our monthly meetings. We have, you know, our membership, you know, they ask a lot of questions. A lot of people were very afraid of the probationary employees. I mean, we had three probationary employees that were let go, and then they brought them back because the court order overturned that. But now, with the strengthening of this, you know, Schedule F, and all, they're increasing the year. They are adding a year to a probationary period. So there are staff that are going to be affected by that. If you're in your probationary period, you have very limited rights. Again, not what people voted for. Why are we doing this? My biggest thing is they have turned it into an extremely toxic work environment, hostile, if you will, because they don't want you talking to your coworkers. They don't want you to know what's happening with anybody else. They want you to come in, focus on what work they need you to do, and you shouldn't be complaining about it. You have a job.
Yeah. Well, what do you say to the argument on that front of that's work in America? That's virtually every job in this country, where, you know, there's a threat of potential unionization of workers coming together and demanding better wages, hours, conditions, that kind of toxic, you know, keep your head down or you're going to be next kind of mentality. Because I've been arguing, you know, a lot of people said they want Trump to be president so he can run the country like a business. I argue he is. He's treating you guys like he treated his own workers, or a lot of employers treat their employees.
That infuriates me that the federal government employees are at the, you know, at the hand of the president of the United States. I will tell you, the first Trump administration, I was extremely, I was flabbergasted when he decided for a couple of months that he was going to not withhold our Social Security money out of our paychecks to give money more back to us. Like, $46 every 2 weeks is going to give me any more food on my table. No, stop messing with my taxes. Like, I don't understand that. Again, just to throw a little dig out there, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but obviously he's not showing his taxes, so it doesn't matter to him. But my taxes is extremely important to me. And so not only did he mess that up for the year that we were in, but it trickled into the next year because they double dipped and took all that Social Security payment out from January to May of the following year. So I was extremely hot about that.
Yeah, because like, ultimately you got to dig in your pocket come tax time to make up for the wonderful gift he gave you, which really was nothing more than a headache. But I want to go back to, you know, the treatment, because, you know, during the break, you shared a story about the director and how hostile, because as I understand, you guys have always had a good working relationship at that facility. And now you've got this hostility that's come in because of leadership. And I would argue this is, you know, the fish rots from the head down. This is coming right out of the Oval Office.
Oh, yes, it is. So I became the president in February 24. And in August of 2024, the medical center director just decided that he no longer wanted to use the annual union leave roster policy for the staff to select their annual weeks of leave. I filed a grievance. I filed an unfair labor practice. I even filed for a temporary restraining order against it through the FRLA. That was denied. I do have an appeal on the table, but that's probably going to sit there for another 4 years till we get to hear that. But 25 plus years of past practice, and the employees were extremely angry because he threw out there that you didn't have to use seniority. The supervisor could decide how they wanted to allow and approve the employee's leave roster or what their annual leave they would be taking. And I did a petition. I did everything to kind of point it out. And there was a meeting that was held. I was in the back of the room and I raised my hand and I asked a specific question. Like, it shouldn't be by my Social Security number, because he said you could use the last four of someone's Social Security number, their spot on the roster. My date of hire and my seniority should count. It has always counted. And I asked a question. His face became very red. He lashed back at me. And he said, this is not the time and or place. Well, I am an employee here too. And I'm just saying what everybody else is afraid to say, because in our facility, absolutely retaliation is a thing. If you step over the line, like, you can see it. You become the outcast, you become the scarlet lettered person, and then stuff just starts to trickle down. And then your supervisor starts digging into whether or not you did quality work. Like, you weren't worried about that 2 years ago, but because I voiced my opinion, now you are. That stuff is happening.
And this is, again, the reason why workers need a union, to protect them in those moments when retaliation does rear its head, and favoritism and harassment and all of the things that that workers across this country have to endure. But here, I guess the question I want to finish up with is, do your members feel the same way? Are they seeing the same kind of treatment? Because there's a moment here where if Trump gets his way, you will not have the protections of a union, of AFGE or any union, because, well, everyone's going to be almost at will. I guess at will is what the court has basically given Trump the ability to do.
So AFGE has a very, very good supporting structure, and I'm very grateful for my supporting structure through the national AFGE. We do have other tools that we can use. Doesn't necessarily mean if our collective bargaining agreement goes away, while it is very meaningful, and a lot of people do not, they don't know what that master agreement means to them. That is their Bible. I like to say that. That's my Bible. I have one in every realm. In hard copy, I have it in an electronic copy on every device that I have, because I might need to reference it. I don't know it by heart, but I absolutely am very familiar with referencing it. But the biggest thing that people don't really understand is, you take that collective bargaining agreement away, you have greater risk, and they could fire you just because you wore a blue shirt to work. And that's not a reason to fire or terminate somebody. They can pick on you and cause you mental anguish and distress and anxiety. Like, how do you don't want people like that working and giving care to a patient. Like, happy staff means happy services. That's what I say all the time. But, you know, we do have other tools that we have explored that we can use, congressional grievance forms and things like that. And I think that it's going to be a lot of work. But I hope that when when and if the pendulum swings and Mr. Trump is no longer our president, I hope that it comes back around and we are able to regain the momentum again. But the staff at the Altoona VA, some of them have caught on and we have had conversations, you know, and they said, you know, I made a mistake. I think a lot of Americans who put that little check mark in that box are realizing that they did make a mistake, because your eggs, your gas, your groceries, that's not going anywhere. And if that's why you cast that vote, I think you should look into more bigger issues in this country.
But people's rights are going away now. And
they are.
The idea of
they
due process is going away. The idea of contracts are going away. And again, nothing that people say they didn't vote for. But again, you go back to the election cycle. I'm sure you were telling your members, as I was telling my audience, this stuff is coming. They've written it down. They're running on it. It's going to happen. So we can't. I have no sympathy for someone who goes, I'm surprised. I didn't vote for this. Yeah, you kind of did.
I mean, we pushed the Project 2025. The whole list, like, it's a checklist for him. It's a checklist for this administration. Like, just pay attention. It's coming. And there are so many, like, we have 1/3 of our employees are veterans. And how you're getting it not only from the veteran standpoint and your care, but now you're getting it from the angle of your position that you have, your job that feeds your family, takes care of your livelihood. So you're getting screwed twice. No, like, stop.
Not good. Jennifer Salt, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work. Keep up the fight. We will get through this.
Absolutely.
Might be some suffering, but we're going to get through it. Jennifer, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Are you experiencing any of this stuff, maybe in the workplace by you? Or is it, as I've had people tell me, well, it's about time that those federal workers understand what it's like to work in America. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe this is where we got to go. Like I've been saying, the solution's going to come out of the suffering. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that began the Baltimore Bank Riot. The Bank of Maryland had failed in 1834. Thousands of people who had deposited money in the bank saw their savings vanish. For nearly a year and a half, the depositors wanted their money to be returned. Anger grew. Some of that anger was directed at one of the bank's directors, Reverdy Johnson. The bank directors were accused of fraud and speculation that had caused the bank's failure. The bank officials were also dragging their feet on settling accounts with bank clients because the directors wanted to keep their personal fortunes. A crowd gathered around Director Johnson's house and broke out some windows. The mayor of Baltimore ordered a troop of 30 armed guards to protect Johnson's residence. The next day, the angry mob turned their attention to another director, John Glenn. They began to demolish his home before the mounted guards stopped the damage. 2 days later, the mob returned to Director Johnson's home. This time, they were able to overpower the guards. They piled up Johnson's property in the street and set it on fire. The crowd swelled and moved on to destroy property of other bank directors. Revolutionary War veteran Sam Smith organized a militia of 3,000 men to stop the destruction. The leaders of the bank protest were arrested and jailed. The bank directors received $100,000 from the state as compensation for the destruction of their property. The bankers were not held responsible for their actions, which caused the bank to fail. Does this sound familiar? Most of the bankers who caused the 2008 crash also never faced consequences.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So welcome back to the future, because we're living through it right now. We are living through the back to the future moment here in this country where, look, collective bargaining rights, union rights, basic worker protections. You know, the thing that once built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity? Gutted. Done. That's going to be the Trump legacy. Reagan's legacy was the shot heard across the boardroom. It was open season on unions during the Reagan years. Now, well, it's that on steroids. And look, this isn't some warning from a distant past. We are speeding back. We're speeding back to the future, as I said. Right now, you're seeing a wave of anti-union laws being proposed and moved, executive orders that are terrible, corporate lawsuits and attacks that, look, it's going to plunge us back into the era, as I've been saying for a while, company towns, company script, voiceless, powerless, at-will employment, desperation. Are you surprised? The answer should be no. Every executive order that Trump moves forward on is an attack on workers' rights. But Rick, he cares. No. And I know, it's just those federal workers. You know, I've had a number of conservatives over the years tell me, you know, we don't have a problem with unions. It's just those government unions. And you go, they're workers like everyone else. So if you're willing to set your public sector workers out on an island and allow them to be attacked, as Trump and the Republicans are doing, as Republicans have been doing for decades, then, well, you're willing to attack all workers. That Trump executive order targets over 2/3 of the federal workforce. And as I've been saying, you know, the weird thing is how is the guy who empties the garbage can, how is that a national security job? And by ending their ability to have collective bargaining rights, they have no representation. There's no grievance procedure. There's no due process. There is patronage. There is dear leader. Do what dear leader says, or your life will be turned upside down. And I fully expect them to do as Reagan did when he fired the Patco workers and blacklist them from ever working for the federal government again, because that's what they do. And the weird thing is, you know, my mind goes, well, what happens when collective bargaining goes away? You're going to be in all this horrible situation. The sad reality is, for far too many workers in this country, that's already the reality. At will, poverty wage, desperate working condition jobs is what's out there for many, many working class folks. And this, again, for me, a failure of the Democrats to be the ones to stand up and fight for those people. Even if you lose, you stand up and you fight. But understand, we're heading back, like I said, to the future of yellow dog contracts, where if you have the audacity to say that you'll ever vote for a union, you don't get a job. We're heading back to a time where the company owned everything. And it's not that distant of a past. You know, right when I moved to Pennsylvania back in 93, I met a guy, older guy. He said when he came back from Vietnam, they gave him a little bit of money, and he went back to, you know, coal country up in Nanticoke, I believe it was, in Pennsylvania, where they used to mine coal. And he said, look, I paid the company store off with that little bit of money. And he said it, the first time in his family's lineage and their time in this country that they weren't in debt to the company store. And that story has stuck with me all these years, because we seem to be heading back in that direction. We seem to be heading back in a direction of Musk getting a company town in Texas, having the ability to do anything he wants. We're moving towards all of this digital currency and willingly going, oh, it's just more convenient. Yeah, it's just more convenient. Question is, folks, once we get there, will we, I guess like the frog in the pot, will we know? And if we do figure it out, is there a way out? Or will we continue to eat each other while we're in the pot? It's amazing to me every day when I talk to workers, oh, those government workers, don't care about them. without understanding we're all in the same pot. We all go to work and punch a clock and all have to support our families. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. After a nationwide ground stop of all mainline flights, United Airlines says it has fixed its computer issues and is getting planes back in the air, tackling a backlog of hundreds of delays and some cancellations. Apple's head Tim Cook joining President Trump at the White House to announce the tech company's boosting U.S. investment to $600 billion.
This is a significant step toward the ultimate goal of ensuring that iPhones sold in the United States of America also are made in America.
President Trump announcing a 100% tariff on computer chips and semiconductors made outside the U.S., but zero tariff for companies moving manufacturing to America. The president doubling the tariff on goods from India to 50% over India importing Russian oil. The five Army soldiers shot and wounded at Fort Stewart, Georgia today, expected to recover, says a general at the base who also says they were shot by a coworker, a sergeant. This is ABC News.